on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of Invest Talk. Appreciate you being with me. Our phone is open right now for any live calls that you might want to make, any questions you want to make live, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time, we're live. Whether you're listening on the radio or podcast, we're here to help with any money matters in any way we can. 888-99-CHART is the number you can call right now. 888-992-4278. Matter of fact, you can call anytime you want. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Also, you can reach us via Twitter at KPP Financial. That's our Twitter ID. Or you can get a note directly to me by clicking on Contact Steve on investtalk.com. This being Friday, I'd like to give you a sampling of our weekly premium newsletter. It comes out every Friday. Usually, I've noticed that I work on it before the market opens, and I'm usually done with it by around when the market opens, or within an hour or so. And it's out usually before the afternoon to everybody. But now, on the newsletter itself, I always start off with the same thing, a summary of the week, a market commentary, a summary of the economic news came out that week, and some of the things that impacted the market. And I said, as the market has been rising out of the ashes of the 2000 recession, the market is sheer, the bull market phase is clearly showing its age. For all of 2015, the S&P 500 has gone nowhere, sideways. And I try to give you some insight on the conditions which caused that. Why is that happening? What's going on that make the market not move up or down? Why isn't it going either direction? So that's what's the first section is. And I always, in that first section, give a little hint as what we think you should do. Remember, I have our clients come first, so that newsletter goes out to all our clients plus those people who subscribe. And also for everybody else in that news, I always give a couple stock ideas on the stock idea selection. Two stocks this week. Usually it's two stocks or two issues, two equities of some kind every week. Portfolio management section addressed the important aspect of decision making. This week I talked about reinvesting dividends. You know, and you got to figure out cost basis about those things. But and finally, the consumer watch section, I try to point it out to how you could save money, or at least avoid losing any you don't have to. This week we came talked about budgeting tools, a couple of internet web budgeting tools that you might want to check out. And you can try our newsletter for a month, everybody. It's worth your time to subscribe. Just go to investtalk.com, scroll down to the bottom of the page. It's, $9.95 a month, something like that. And it comes out every Friday. So give me a call. We're here to help you right now. This is the hour that we're live and can be interactive with you. Let's get your voice on the program. Judy in Thousand Oaks, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Thanks for calling.
I have a question about exchange-traded funds. Mm-hmm. Do they pay dividends?
Yes. If you buy an exchange-traded fund that has dividends, yes, they'll pay dividends, yes.
Okay.
There are some exchange-traded funds, Judy, that specialize in dividends.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I haven't really got into exchange traded funds.
Telling you, I think they're going to be, it's a really good way, Judy, to instantly get diversified in a particular sector or a particular, or an index or a country. Very good way to instantly get yourself, and you can get out anytime. Like you could trade it like a stock, and you can short ETFs if you want to.
Well, the one reason I was interested is because I don't really understand international, like some of the other companies that I'm in individually, so I thought it would be better.
Actually, it would be, because you'll have a good diversification. Judy, thanks for the call.
Hey, you're welcome.
Maury and Milpitas.
I just have a general question. I'm kind of reading the, you know, financial sections and listening on the news, and they say that you need $1 million to retire now.
Yeah.
And also another comment that most people are underinvested. So yes. Let's say there's no way you're going to have $1 million for retirement with the way things are going, and it's pretty hard to increase it. Should you then invest in riskier stocks to increase your possible reward to get to $1 million, or what?
No, not necessarily. Always reverts back to what is your age? How close are you to retirement? This is my fear in that scenario, Maury. Let's say you only have 7 more years or 10 more years, okay? And you know you only have a couple $100,000. And you're going to say, well, you know what? I don't have enough money. I won't have enough money in retirement. So you go on and take more and more and more risk. And you're getting older and you're taking more risk. You're getting older, more risk, older, more risk. Only one major mistake and you're wiped out. You do not do that. You do just the opposite. I'm worried that people will do just that. They're taking more risk as they get older because they haven't been saving enough young enough. But you really shouldn't do that. What that means, Maury, is that you're just not going to be able to retire at the age you want to retire.
I see.
You take less risk as you approach retirement. But if you have lots of money, you can take as much risk as you want. But I'm just saying that if you're the average guy out there, and this is the money for retirement, as you approach retirement, you should always have some exposure to the stock market. But at a certain point in your life, you're going to say, you know what? I can't take risk with this money. I'm going to need it.
So the penalty for underinvesting is that you're going to have to work longer.
Correct.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Appreciate the call.
10 ways index funds can save your retirement. Well, I was reading it. We'll talk about what those 10 ways are. Some of them are very, very true. And some of them are, you know, it's an opinion, but we'll talk about it. That's going to be our main talking point. I'm also going to talk about the bond and stock divergence, bond prices and stock prices, the divergence that's going on. What does that mean when it diverges from each other? In other words, prices of stock is not going the same direction as the bonds. Surprisingly, it does not mean stocks are rising and bonds are falling. Divergence means they're just going in different directions or one is veering off from the other. So we're going to discuss what it means when bonds diverge from stocks or vice versa. And something we haven't talked about in a long time, housing. The millions of home mortgages that are still underwater. No one talks about it anymore. And there's reasons why they don't. But there's still a lot that the house is worth less than the debt. And managing cash in your retirement. Some things to consider when managing cash in retirement. Things that you should do. Things that you should at least understand to try to preserve or manage that cash as you withdraw and spend it in retirement.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Okay, let's go to Richard in Pacifica. How are you doing, Richard?
Today, my question is on investing or planning college for my son.
Okay.
I had a thought, if I invest in a 529, mm-hmm. What if at the point he's going to go to college, he decides he doesn't want to go? What do I do with the money then?
Or very, very good question.
Should I invest in something different to give him that option when he becomes that age?
Let's talk about a 529 plan because I know a lot of people may not know what that is. Each state puts together what's called a 529 plan. Not every state has one. It is a plan for college education. College education. I stress college because it's only can be used for college and an accredited college. The 529 plan, you put money in. You can put quite a bit. I don't remember the amount. Richard, do you happen to know?
Per year?
Yeah.
Or to start it out with?
Per year. What's a maximum you can put in it? It's in the thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it's a few thousand somewhere there.
But the problem that Richard's asking, and this is the problem, you set up a 529 program for your child to go to college, and then when he's 18, he decides he doesn't want to go to college. A 529 plan can only be used for college. You can't use it for anything else.
What you can do at that point is roll it over to another child or another adult. You could use it for your college if you want to go back to school. If you don't, you're going to get taxed and penalty if you take it out of the 529 program and not use it for college.
Okay.
Find out before you started what that tax and penalty. If you have two children, you can set up two, and if one doesn't go, roll the other one into, I mean, somehow you got to roll it.
Right. He's a single child, so.
Then you got an issue there. What if he doesn't?
What other investments would be equivalent to a 529 that I could get into for him?
That is a good alternative. A 529 plan usually has limits. The good thing about the 529 is you get the tax write-off, okay?
Right.
Now, you can also do a Coverdell, which is an education IRA for your child. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a little bit more flexible, but you can't put as much money in it. I think it's $3,000 a year. But a Coverdell can be used for other things other than an approved college. So let's say he wanted to be a truck driver or a hairdresser. You can use that money. Let's say you wanted to use that money for a private high school or elementary school or a middle school. You can use that money.
Okay,
so that gives you a little bit more freedom. And again, you can roll that over to another child because you never know. You maybe have another one. Or a niece or a nephew if you feel extra generous and you have lots of money in 20 years from now. But you still have to use it for education, and you still will get penalized if you use it for something other than education. It's just a lot more flexible.
Okay.
Thanks, Richard. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Check out our info sheet on diversification. We also have a list of dividend-paying ETFs. You can have access to these and more when you sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider. And you can do that at InvestTalk.com. That's with two T's, InvestTalk.com. It's free, and it's pretty easy to do. And use our free listener line right now if you want. Try and give me a call and ask your money questions. I'll do my best to help you. 888-99-CHART is our number.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Gene in beautiful North Carolina. I have never been to North Carolina, but I have friends who live there, and they say it's spectacular. Is that
Thanks
true?
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it, Gene. Appreciate it.
Question is, if you have a thinly traded stock, let's say under 100,000 shares per day, what are the chances that if you tried to get a price quote from two discount brokers that the prices are pretty much the same? Or is there a wide variation?
The less liquid it is, the less likely you'll get they'll be the same. And it is fairly wide. It's in today's market where it's electronic trading and not a broker out there, a floor broker or whatever, the spread between the bid and ask is much thinner. But with a very illiquid stock, that spread widens dramatically. And just so you know, Gene, and for everybody else, when the market starts to fall sharply and everybody wants to get out because they want to protect their profits, your spread on very illiquid stocks gets extremely wide, and you can't get out. There's times you just can't get out.
Right, right. I'm wondering just, you know, if people try and use a discount broker just to lower the commission, is there in general more of a bias that you get a worse price for illiquid stocks, or does it not matter?
Well, if you put in a market order, you will get a worse price the more illiquid the price of the stock is. Not necessarily a discount broker versus a regular broker. Because as I said, it's mostly electronic to trading, the trades.
So if you put in a limit order, you wait for it. If it does execute, is it less? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is there any downside in, if you're just interested in trading and not services from a discount broker, is there any downside in the price you can get executed at any given time from a discount broker versus a more full service broker?
The answer would be no, as long as it's traded on a major exchange, New York or NASDAQ. It's not a pink sheeted item. It's not a foreign stock traded on a foreign desk, because that's all different. But if there is no difference between a discount broker and a regular broker, if it's a New York or NASDAQ listed stock. Gene, appreciate the call.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. If you'd like to see the investment programs offered by KPP Financial, just go to InvestTalk, the InvestTalk tab on InvestTalk.com. Yesterday, I mentioned our balanced income portfolio, a program. Also, take a look at the select growth. They're all there. Meanwhile, I'm looking at the phones, waiting for your call. 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And remember, you can get a question to Steve or Justin directly and get an answer back by email. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin. Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
How about if we go to Bill in Livermore? How you doing, Bill?
Yeah, I'm doing good. You?
I'm great. I'm really doing well.
My question was, what's the difference between a registered investment advisor and a certified financial planner?
Very good question, and there is a great big difference. A registered investment advisor is a guy who manages portfolios. We actually manage money. A financial planner does not manage money. A financial planner manages every piece or aspect of your financial life. In other words, he may suggest you buy life insurance. He'll talk about your medical coverage. He'll talk about your house and what kind of mortgage you have, and maybe you need to refinance or get a different mortgage. And he will talk about, you know, where you should put your money in this mutual fund or that, and he'll sell you loaded funds. He'll tell you to put them in loads. But he himself does not manage money. A registered investment advisor gets paid taking a small piece of the money he manages. A financial planner usually gets paid in one of two ways. He gets commission on the products he sells, life insurance, house, remortgaging a house. He gets a fee for that. He gets a fee for sending you to loaded funds, okay? But he physically does not manage the money, which an advisor does. We get paid a fee for managing the money.
Okay.
Thank you for the call.
Bye.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Paul in Point Richmond, how you doing, Paul?
Very good, thank you. I'm approaching retirement,
okay,
and I'm pretty well diversified, but I have $100,000. I'm afraid to really risk market right now. I'm in a money market. It's at 3%.
Okay.
I'm thinking I'll just, I don't know where else to go. I'm afraid of REITs. I'm afraid of the high yield market. I just think I may leave it sit there until, say, bonds go higher in terms of yield and then invest in a bond.
Can I give you a better way to go without taking any risk?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you heard me talk about laddering before.
Yes.
Okay. How about taking that $100,000 and divide it up into maybe, let's say, 10 parts, $10,000 each.
Okay.
You could do CDs or you can do treasuries. Okay, and what you do is you go out like 6 months. Well, when do you think interest rates will go up? Maybe 3 months?
Yeah.
Okay, first one due in 3 months. Go out 3 months. The next one, 6 months. The next one, 9 months. The next one, 1 year. Then 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. What you do is you keep ladder them out to the longer, so you keep going out far. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe go out only maybe 3 to 4 years.
Okay?
So now, as interest rates rise, the first $10,000 comes due, you go out for like 3 years. And that'll give you the highest rate for 3 years, right?
Right.
Then the next one, now 6 months later, you're going to go out another 3 years. So 3 years and 3 months, the second one will come due. You see how I'm doing that?
Uh-huh.
What this does, it's called a ladder. If interest rates rise, you're getting more and more return. And over the long haul, if interest rates continue to rise, you will make more money. And it's very safe.
Okay.
You can do it that way. You know, if you lock up a CD for a year or 2 years,
mm-hmm,
and interest rates go up in between, you're not really maximizing your gain. You are maximizing your security, you know, if you're safe.
Yeah.
But the latter idea is not that hard, really. When it comes up for renewal, you just got to tell the bank, you can do it by phone or whatever. They'll do it automatically over the phone. Tell them what you want.
What portion of that should I have available to pay tax on that income?
Well, what you do is you make sure that you have one come due a little bit before April 15th.
Okay. Yep.
That way, you know, okay, here's $10,000. Okay. Well, how much do I need to pay taxes?
All right.
Paul, that's a good question.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks very much.
Let's go to Sonny in San Jose. He wants to talk about 401k. Listening to us on a streaming broadcast on investtalk.com. Thank you for calling, Sonny. I appreciate it.
Thank you for taking my call, Steve. I have a question that I had my previous employer, 401k, where I was working for before. Mm-hmm. And now I actually changed my employment to the new employer.
Right.
So I was wondering, I have a 401k. It was also in a self-directed 401k account.
Uh-huh.
So... is it better to roll over to IRA or maybe even to Roth?
I've always thought it was better to roll it into a 401k, but these are your choices, Sonny. You can roll the old 401k into your new 401k at your new employer. You can do that. But you'll still be subject to all the choices that's offered in the 401k. If the choices are very varied and across a lot of sectors and you get a lot of choices, well, that makes me feel better that you could just leave it in the 401k. But generally, they're not that way. And generally, I suggest to people to roll it into an IRA so that you can have complete control of what you want to invest it in instead of being subject to, you know, target-dated funds or just the 5 or 6 mutual funds they offer. Because many times, those mutual funds and target-dated funds are not the best. So it's always depends on your company. But I would always... almost always roll it over to an IRA so you can buy what you want.
Okay, so will it call me a rollover self-directed IRA account? Will it?
Call? Yes, it's called a rollover IRA. You can open. Yeah, self-directed. You can open up with any brokerage firm, Schwab, TD Ameriprise, anywhere. You can, and then you can even hire a manager if you wanted to. If you didn't want to manage yourself, you have the ability to hire a manager. Most 401ks, you don't have that choice. I just like the unlimited choices you have, Sonny, when you roll it into an IRA. I just like that. Okay?
Okay. So the question is, can you actually, let's say you have 100K, you can actually divide into 2 different brokers?
Yeah. Yes, you can. Yeah, you can divide into 4, 5, 10. You can do whatever you want. That's, again, freedom. I like the freedom.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Okay, we want to talk about some ways index funds, index investing, can help save your retirement. And there are, you know, so there's benefits about index. You'll never hear me say anything bad about indexing. You won't hear me say that. That's not who I am, not who I like to talk about. One of the things I like about indexing is it's cheap. You don't, there's no trading costs. There's not a lot of activity. You just index. You just buy and hold. So there's good reasons to have an index. There's some good solid reasons that they are better than many others. There's just one of them is that they're not actively traded, moved around. Therefore, increasing costs, trading costs, and something like that. And when you index, even if you use a mutual fund or ETF, they're very low cost. Okay, so those are things that are good. There's an article I'm referring to on our website, and you can read it. I don't want to go through all 10. I will say this though: there is a big flaw in indexing that most people, and when you hear about the news, they talk about how good it is. They don't talk about it. And one is, there's absolutely no defensiveness in indexing. There's no way to be defensive. And, you know, for instance, if in a money manager situation, the money manager can, like, go produce some cash or put on some hedges so if they're worried about the market being overextended to protect against the downside. And indexing doesn't do that. And that's fine as long as you just hold it and keep buying it and don't think about it for years and years and years. You've got to have a very long perspective on indexing. Think about it this way: from 2000 to 2015, the Nasdaq. If you indexed in the Nasdaq, you would have not made one dime, almost for 14 plus years. But if you stay with it, you'll make plenty of money. But it's got to be long periods of time. A money manager or an actively managed account can be defensive, and that sometimes is very good. And one more thing is, most people think that they are buying holders, that they'll do it. As long as there's a bull market, everybody just stays with the market. They're very confident that they'll just stay with it. But most people, more than 50%, get out when the market is at the bottom. They finally get out scared, get tired of losing money, and get out. They can't handle it anymore, and that's the absolute worst thing you can do. And this has been proven over and over and over that that's what people do, especially through their 401ks. They get out at the bottom, they get back in near the top, they get back out at the top, and they prove this by performance of 401ks, people's performance. So I do like indexing. I think it's a great way to invest, but you have to have a long-term perspective, and not everybody says they do when the market's in a bull market phase. But when it doesn't, when it's in a bear market phase, people don't want to stick with the indexing. And that's when you should be buying more, not selling. Buy more of the index when the market is crashed. How do you think Warren Buffett does so well over the years? He keeps buying. He has, of course, a money machine called insurance companies that keeps flooding him with money. And when the market gets cheap, he invests all that money. That's how he does it. He's done a very good job at it. It's always nice if you have more money coming in. Yeah, that's always nice. Job number one on Invest Talk is answering your questions. Our 24-hour listener line is always open for any money question you might have. And I've got some background in insurance. You got an insurance question? I can answer those kinds of questions. I bought and sold real estate over the years. So anything I can help you with, I'll be happy to do. And here's the number, 888-99-CHART.
I'm looking into getting into stocks. I've never played before. I've never invested, and I'm wondering if you have any if you have any tips or pointers where I should get started and what I should do. Thank you.
Most time when I talk to beginners, I say start with the indexes we just talked about. Start there because it's a learning process. Many people are anxious. I want to buy Disney. I want to buy XYZ company. They have something coming up. And to get all excited buying an individual stock, and it's not a good way to get started. It is not, because you're putting all your money in one stock or just one or two stocks. You don't know really why you bought it. You just like the company. You don't know anything fundamentals, technicals. You don't know what's going on. You just like it. Well, now you like it because you heard somebody else say they liked it. And that's usually not a good recipe for buying stocks. So I always suggest, well, why don't you start with indexing? The NASDAQ, the S&P 500, Russell 2000. There's a lot of indexes. And then start learning how stocks work, learning what drives markets, what drives stock prices, what are the fundamentals mean. That's how you have to kind of, it's a learning process. You start reading about it. But if you don't want to be part of that process, then stick with indexing or hire somebody else to invest for you. But usually when you start off, you don't have a lot of money, so the wiser thing is to stick with buying an index mutual fund or an ETF. And I would suggest, if you absolutely have no idea, use the SPY with the S&P 500, that's the ETF, or the QQQ with the NASDAQ 100. The NASDAQ 100 is a little higher growth than the S&P. The S&P 500 is more broad. And do that. That's what I would suggest. Okay? Okay, it's time for InvestTalk Personal, the day-to-day money choices that can have a lasting impact on your finances. Before you buy online, exercise some common sense. Okay, if you have concerns about the website you're using, don't buy online. Don't enter your credit card details. Don't do all that. Don't. If you're concerned with the website. If you're using a public computer, the library, everything else, my suggestion is not to buy anything online, because you don't know how secure that is. Now, most major credit card companies now have secure online systems that can give you some additional protection. And the way that works, before you make the transaction, you have to go through a little additional password protection on the credit card you're using. And it's not a bad idea. You know, so I you may want to set that up. And if you're using a public computer, again, I would not suggest you buy things online using that. And one more thing, keep a record of the phone number and street address of the seller of whatever you're buying in case there is a problem with your purchase or bill. If you can't find, you may want to find them. You may want to look elsewhere. You got to be careful. Now, I'm not talking about Amazon, and I'm not talking about Walmart, online buying. Those are pretty safe places to buy, even though, of course, there's data breaches, as we all know. But as far as paying for something, not having your credit card stolen too easily, and actually get the product you pay for, you'll get it for those big places. Sometimes about smaller places that maybe, they have a smaller presence. You got to be a little bit more careful. But that's InvestTalk Personal. If there is a topic you want me to talk about, just get in touch. You can click on, you can call 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Me on InvestTalk.com.
Life insurance, it can be complicated. Understanding life insurance is one of Steve's info sheets that can clear things up for you. When you're an InvestTalk insider, you have access to these info sheets and much more. Sign up now. It's free on InvestTalk.com.
Being a day trader, I'm wondering, aside from just having a lot of money in your account, aside from having not investing the full 100%, there are times where I do invest my portfolio 100%. How do you avoid selling a stock and then having to wait 3 days for it to settle before you can turn around and actually maybe repurchase the same stock? Is there something I'm missing there, and that way I won't be in violation of good faith, aside from just having a lot of money that I'm not investing? Is there another way as a day trader that I can avoid these violations? Appreciate your answer. Look forward to hearing it, and I love your show. Thank you.
So what he's talking about is when you buy a stock, there's 3 days clearing, that's called. 3 days to clear. They got 3 days to clear the stock. And that means for the transaction to actually complete, they, meaning the brokerage firm you're using, TD Ameritrade or wherever, JP Morgan, they get 3 days to clear the trade. While it's clearing those 3 days, you don't get to use the money again because it's not finished the purchase. It's like, you bought something, but you haven't really paid for it for 3 days. Now, this is a rule that's pretty old. In the older days, it took that long for it to clear. Now they clear instantaneously, but that rule hasn't changed. It hasn't caught up with the modern times and the speed of computers. But, so what he's saying is, if I have $100,000 and I'm day trading, I buy $100,000 stock today, worth of stock today, and then I sell that same $100,000 by the end of the day. So now I don't own it, but now I got to wait 3 days for to be access to my money. Is there any way I can avoid that waiting period? And the answer is no. No. You can contact your brokerage firm. They might let you go on margin for some of the money that you have, but that means you're borrowing money and you're paying interest, and I don't recommend that at all. So I don't think there's any way you can avoid it. I don't think there is. I really don't. So as a day trader, you got to deal with those issues. I hope everybody understood that when you buy something, it takes 3 days to clear. And sometimes this is very confusing, especially at the end of the year. Let's say you bought a stock on December 31st. It won't clear until January 3rd and a whole new year. So your tax situation, do you own it? Did you own that thing? Let's say you sold the stock on December 31st and it clears on January 3rd. When is your, do you pay in the capital gains in the following year or the year that you sold it? And your records are not showing on December 31st, the end of the, it shows you that the stock is still owned even though you sold it because the trade hasn't cleared. You see how it can get messy? These clearing dates, it's sometimes a mess.
Managing multiple mutual funds, researching professional services, where to put your savings. If it's about money and if it's important to you,
We want to know more about it. We're here for you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve or Justin right now on InvestTalk.
Let's go to Matt in Cupertino. How you doing, Matt?
Thanks for taking my call. A quick question for you. I was curious in your opinion versus mutual bond funds or individual bond ladders.
I would rather see you buy a ladder of individual bonds than bond funds.
Mm-hmm.
You know why?
You tell me.
Okay.
That's why I'm calling.
Okay. Bond funds now, you got to remember what a bond fund does. It buys a bunch of bonds. So you get nice diversification. That's a big plus, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the net asset value of that bond fund will go up and down depending on interest rates, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if interest rates are moving up and you have a bond fund, the net asset value of that fund will go down. You'll still get your yield, in other words, the dividends that are coming in through those bonds. You'll still get those. But if your yield is 5% and the bond fund net asset value goes down 5%, you're no further along. If you buy the bonds direct and you buy a good spread of very safe bonds, I'm not interested in high risk stuff. We're talking about very safe stuff. If you buy them and hold them to maturity, they also will go up and down in value, but you will always get your money back plus the yield if you hold them to maturity. Whereas in a bond fund, that doesn't happen, even though they may hold them to maturity, but the bond fund value goes up and down based on the interest rates. So you could buy a personal bond and you can buy it and hold it, and it will go up and down in value, but if you hold it to maturity, you'll get that money back. That's not necessarily so in a bond fund.
That makes total sense. You saved me a few hours.
Okay. Matt, I appreciate it. I like bonds. I'm not opposed to them, but right now I'd keep them short duration.
Like 1 to 5 or how short?
5 years or less.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate the call. We have a program that does buy bonds. We hold in maturity inside there. So we know that they'll go up and down in value, but we'll get the yield and they'll go back to their par value when they mature so that you don't have that huge risk of a bond fund that will go up and down.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Bonds and stock, bond prices and stock prices are diverging, meaning bonds are going down and stocks are going sideways. That divergence has been going on recently at a much stronger rate. But it has happened over the last year, this divergence. Why is this important? Because usually if the bond market falls or the bond market goes up, the stock market follows. It's common that the stock market falls. So it's suggesting that we're in for a correction based on this. And also to support that, the stocks there's fewer and fewer stocks hitting new highs and fewer above the 200-day moving average. That's usually an indication of a correction that's coming. But one of the things that the market does is tries to embarrass the most people it can. And a lot of people have been talking about correction, including myself. And when that happens, if too many people are talking about it, it won't happen. Because it's already built in. Everybody's already taken action to weather the correction. Well, if you've already taken action, how's the correction going to happen? That's the thinking anyways. It's a contrarian thought process. But a lot of people think we are in for a correction. I am in that group that we are way overdue for a correction. But I'm also staying with the market because I don't want to be trying to time that correction. At the same time, I do have a few defensive positions in just in case. So I have reacted to the correction that should come. So am I part of the crowd that already reacted? Kind of interesting, huh? How's this work? That's why it's so difficult. Now it's time to get your question in before the end of the hour. We're almost done. We have last segment coming up. 888-99-CHART. You can reach me right now. Any money question is a good question. Dennis in Dublin has a question. And then we'll take one from you, hopefully. 888-99-CHART.
Our
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And remember, you can get a question to Steve or Justin directly and get an answer back by email. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin. Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
We'll go to George in San Diego. How are you doing, George?
Fine, thank you, sir. What is your opinion of trust deeds?
Are you a first trust deed or second trust deed?
First ones only.
First trust deed. Mm-hmm. I like them. Okay, George, you mind if I explain it real quick for everybody else what they are?
Yeah, how much risk is there involved?
Okay, and I'll touch on that. A trust deed is where you're talking about a piece of property, everybody, and right. You are the bank. You're the bank. Think of you're the one carrying the mortgage. That's what a trust deed is. A trust deed is a mortgage carrier. So let's say someone buys an office building and they need $300,000, and that's a first trustee. In other words, the first trustee means you're the first position. First position means that if something goes wrong, you get paid first.
Right.
Okay? So first trustees I'm very happy with. Second trustees I'm not so happy with. But it also depends on how much equity. In other words, if you loan $300,000 and the building's worth $1 million, and you're the first trustee of $300,000, there's very little risk there.
Exactly.
Because you're going to get your money, even if the guy goes bankrupt on this building, whether it's an office building or a retail shopping center, I don't care, whatever it is.
I still get my money back.
Right. You'll get your money back.
Right.
So the risk, George, goes to how much equity is in there. And if you have 50% coverage, meaning that there's no more than 50% debt as a first trustee, he can have more debt than that, by the way. But as a first trustee, yours, you don't care about those second guys.
You just get paid first.
Yeah, that's right, because you're going to get paid first.
I see.
So as long as you have coverage of 50% or more, that's very low risk, in my opinion. Now, it's not that liquid, meaning you can't just get your money tomorrow. That's not going to happen.
No.
It's a mortgage.
They say they only keep the money for 1 year.
A one-year trustee, is that what they are?
Yeah.
Okay, because they want to get you out of there, probably because they're paying a high interest rate.
High interest rate, right.
There's nothing wrong with them, George. The fear is, let's say they go under.
Yeah.
Okay, let's say that happens. You won't get your money immediately. That doesn't happen. They got to then sell the properties. You got to foreclose on them.
Oh, yeah, got to wait, you know, and wait and wait.
Yeah. But they are very good income producers. So I think that's a good part of your overall investment strategy. I think it's a good idea.
Okay, Steve, thank you very much.
Thanks, George. Appreciate
Bye-bye.
The call.
Did you get your dose of Steve today? Steve Peasley's market commentary can't always put things right in the market, but it can put things into perspective. There for you every morning on investtalk.com.
Let's talk to Dennis in Dublin. How you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing good, Steve. Enjoy your show. Listen to it every day on my way home from work.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Hey, I got a quick question for you. And that is regarding dividend reinvestment.
Yes.
And the question involved in that is that I currently have it set up where my it's my settlement fund, and I do have my ETFs, and then my dividends, how I have that set up, is that the fractional parts every time that they're is that I go back and I buy a fractional part of the ETF that I'm in.
Right.
My question to you, and that is I've been told that, you know what, keep it that way, have it set it so that it reinvests into those fractional parts so that when you go through the year, it automatically is buying the fractional parts low or whatever else, getting that rather than having to put it into your settlement fund. And
right.
That is my question to you. Is it best to go ahead and have the monies reinvested and put it go into your settlement fund and buy them on your own, or is it just to have them automatically reinvested?
Okay, there really is no difference as far as what would be better or worse, except when it comes to taxes. If you're doing it in an IRA, it really doesn't matter, okay? But let's say you're doing it outside of IRA, Dennis. You have to keep track of your cost basis of every fractional share. So when you do sell someday, you got to figure out what your cost basis is.
for all the sales and fractions that you bought it and all the different prices. That's what you're supposed to do anyways, is keep track. Now, that may, the law changed a couple of years ago where the custodian, whoever has your money, is supposed to keep track of that. So hopefully they'll do that for you, and then it won't really matter that you have to keep track. But in the old days, just a few years ago, it was your responsibility to keep track of your cost basis of all fractional shares. Now I believe that all the custodians have to keep track of that. But really, there's no better or worse way to do it. I mean, I think the way you set it up currently is probably a pretty good way to do it. You always buy shares no matter what the price is. It could be low, it could be high, but at least, you know, your dollar cost averaging on your fractional shares. There's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, okay, great.
Thanks for the call. Thanks, Dennis. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial, we all want to thank you for listening, and we hope you have a good weekend. And let's do it again on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.